And thank you, Tommy. Good morning, church. We are as always thankful to have you with us and be a part of our assembly this morning, our time to gather, our time to worship. It has been a great weekend. I know that the Bynums are excited to have David married off. I know that went successfully last night, and we're thankful for them for that. And it's been really a great week to be a part of the Forest Mill Church. I'm excited. This week starts our small groups for the year, and I know a lot of small groups are planning on meeting tonight, and we're thankful for those and the role that they have come to play in the life of our congregation. So if you are not a part of a small group and would like to do so, we'd encourage you just to pick a group back there on the board and join up. We, in addition to the ones we have posted up there, we have a young adult group that meets with Lori Holt's family at their house, and I just failed to post that up there. But if you think you are a young adult, one, you're probably wrong. But if you are actually a young adult, you are welcome to join that group as well. And you can just speak to Lori about that. So we have been studying through the Gospel of Mark. We've come now to, by the way, you may notice that this last week has seemed, I mean, the last few lessons, you get a lot of stuff happening in a short span of a time. You get the last, Mark is 16 chapters long, and really the last six chapters cover 1 week. Isn't that crazy? I mean, the first 33 years or roughly take 10 chapters, and the last week takes six chapters. It's once been called a passion narrative with an extended intro. Passion is, of course, the last week of Christ, the suffering of Christ. And that's really true. And we've come here to a story that, in fact, in other Gospels is found in different situations. But Mark puts it here for a specific reason. And this is what he says, beginning in chapter 14, verse 1. He says, "Now the Passover and the festival of unleavened bread were only 2 days away. And the chief priests and the teachers of the law were scheming to arrest Jesus and secretly kill him. But not during the festival, they said, or the people may riot." Now, at this little turn of events here at the beginning of Mark 14, it's not really a shock at this point, because we've seen how the chief priests and how the scribes, what they think about Jesus, how they respond to him. And so we're not shocked that they're now scheming to kill him. We've kind of gotten hints all the way along. But we're reminded of the contempt and fear with which the people in power viewed Jesus, how they thought about him. They are angry, they're incensed, they are devious, like plotting this out. But what they are not stupid. The Passover was about to take place, and that was an especially dangerous time for the possibility of riots, if you think about it. Because just here's this city. I mean, Jerusalem's kind of a cosmopolitan city. These are people who are used to living with Roman occupation. And then and now it is swollen to four times its normal size. And you get all these people who are coming from all over Judea and really even beyond Judea. They come from these small villages and towns, and they come in, and they have filled this city just to overflowing, to the point we see Jesus is staying in Bethany, a town a couple of miles away. But so Jerusalem is not just filled with people, it is also filled with their nationalist feelings and their hopes for deliverance from the bondage of the Romans. And on top of that, it's the Passover. What are they remembering at the Passover? Their deliverance from foreign bondage. God's deliverance of them from their bondage in Egypt. So you have all these people gathered in one place. And you know how it gets. I mean, kids, you know, like the school cafeteria. Or parents, you know, go to Walmart on Black Friday. Right, you get a lot of extra people crammed into a small space with an urgent need, and things can get out of hand rather quickly. So here's this situation, and the leaders are like, "Well, we really want to arrest Jesus, and here he is. We know where he is. He's right here in a place that we can lay hold of him, but we better not do it during the Passover because they're afraid of what would happen with the crowds." Now, later on, we're going to find, of course, that they actually do arrest him during the Passover, but they do it kind of secretly in a way they can get away with it. But in the meantime, Jesus is staying just a couple of miles away in Bethany, which is located on the lower slopes of the Mount of Olives, and he's eating a meal at the home of Simon the leper. Now, the fact that Simon is hosting a meal tells us that he's probably not a leper, because generally, normal people don't go and eat with lepers because leprosy was contagious and deadly and was you were ostracized. You had to leave and live in a leper colony if you still had leprosy. So we presume that Simon at this point has been healed, presumably by Jesus. So Jesus and his disciples are eating at the home of Simon the leper, and then in comes this woman with an alabaster jar, a very expensive perfume, which she breaks open in order to pour the whole thing over Jesus' head. Now, this perfume, nard, was really expensive because of where it came from. It does not come from Judea, does not come from the Near East. No, it comes only from India. In fact, it's extracted from a plant that grows only on the slopes of the Himalayan mountains. So you think all the way from the Himalayan mountains to Jerusalem, that's a lot of shipping. I mean, that's a lot of shipping and handling. More than 1995, right? So this was really expensive. It was so rare, it was so hard to get, that it was extremely expensive by the time it made its way to the markets of Jerusalem. This one little jar, this one little alabaster jar, and by the way, alabaster itself is a semi-precious stone, and it was translucent, and so this one little jar filled with the perfume, it was estimated to cost about 300 denarii. Now, denarii was what you paid a day laborer. So 300 days' wages, a year's salary for a poorer person, a one-year salary was what this one little jar cost. And you thought the stuff in Dillard's was expensive, right? And so the jar itself was worth quite a bit of money on its own, but she didn't have to break it open. The thing about these jars is, you can open them and pour out what's in them the same way you pour in what's in them, right? And she breaks it open. So why does she do that? Because by breaking it open, she's just dramatizing the complete and total outpouring of this valuable perfume, container and all, for Jesus. Jesus is not just worth what's in the container, he's worth the container itself, not just what it has, but what it is. And so she just is like, everything for Jesus. And at the same time, this is during Passover, remember, at the same time, Passover, of all the times of the year, was the time when the poor were supposed to be remembered. You were supposed to really remember the poor at the time of Passover, because God delivered us and we were poor and we had nothing and God delivered us. So we should be looking after those who are poor and have nothing and cannot be delivered from their own circumstances. So during Passover, all these people come into town and they're looking after the homeless of their day. So people see what this woman has now done and they're thinking, the most natural thing in the world to think is like, what a waste. Just think about how many poor people this woman could have helped if she just sold this one jar, 1 year salary, instead of breaking it open, ruining the jar, and pouring it all out. So they start berating this woman. They get onto her. They're like, woman, you are wasteful. You don't have any sense at all wasting this like that. So they're berating her for her wastefulness. And Jesus responds to their comments, and he says, leave her alone. Why are you bothering her? She's done a beautiful thing for me. The poor you'll always have with you. By the way, this is not Jesus saying, don't worry about the poor. He's just saying you're going to have lots of opportunities and you ought to take advantage of those opportunities. The poor you'll always have with you and take care of them, right? And you can help them anytime you want. But you're not always have me. She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare me for my burial. truly, I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. So Jesus defends, and by the way, we didn't know this woman's name. This unnamed woman, Jesus defends her and her extravagant act of love and devotion. More than that, he holds her up as an example to the disciples, to the 12, like the people who have been following for the last 3 years. He's like, this woman gets it. This woman gets what you ought to be. You ought to be extravagant. Now, there is no indication whatsoever that this woman like had any idea what was about to unfold in Jerusalem. That she could know Jesus was going to be arrested, and that he was going to be crucified, and that he was going to be raised from the dead after being buried in a tomb. There's no way she could have known that. Jesus has been preaching this for a long time now, and even the 12 don't get this. And yet, Jesus interprets what she has done as preparations for burial. And in retrospect, we can kind of see it, because when someone died, if someone died and they were buried, this is exactly what you would do. You would take that alabaster jar and you would break it open, because you're just giving everything. It's like a final act of love and devotion for the one who has passed away. And I don't want this anymore. I just want to give it all to you. And so she has done for Jesus what normally would be done for someone who has died. It was her way of showing her love and devotion for Jesus, right? And so Jesus points and says that this woman has done all that she can. She has given all she can give. And even though she didn't exactly know the situation, like she didn't have all the facts down, right? She didn't understand how Jesus was going to die brutally and be buried and resurrected. And she really didn't even understand how God was going to use her gift. But she gave it anyway. And for this unrestrained act of devotion, Jesus says, this woman was always be remembered. One of the things I've come to know about, at least about me, and sometimes about maybe you too, is that I am reluctant to act until I have all of the information. Anybody else like that? I want to know exactly what's going on, exactly what I need to do, and exactly what the outcome is going to be before I do it. I like that. That's the situation. And I've discovered that rarely is that possible. Like, you just can't even, rarely do you get into a situation that's like, yes, I had all the information correct before ever you got here. No, that rarely happens, that we had all the information. But nevertheless, that's what I think I want. And some of you probably can relate to this idea. And for all of us who may have this tendency, this desire to know everything beforehand, you know how restrictive that can be. I was planning our vacation just a couple of years ago, and I was like trying to find the best hotels and the exact right things to do. And I just thought I researched where we were going for weeks and even into months, and I was trying to find all these itineraries and trying to find out what was, you know, the highest rated and the reviews. I mean, I went through all of that, and then we went on this great trip, and the two best things our family did, we just found on the way. The best food we ate was not planned. The most fun we had was not planned. It was just the way it happened, right? And when you're just waiting for more information, it can prevent us from doing what we can. And so what Jesus is doing here is freeing us from that obligation that we have to know everything and get everything planned exactly right all the time. Jesus says, don't worry about that. That even when we don't know it all, even when we don't have it all figured out, that he can take our act of love and devotion and do something amazing with it. Even when you don't understand what you're doing, even when you don't have all the information, even when you don't have it all figured out, you just give it to Jesus, and he can do something amazing with us. And that when we worship, that our this worship just rises up before him like the sweetest fragrance. I appreciated so much what Tommy was saying about that this morning. It comes up before him like this expensive, priceless perfume. And this woman, despite her limited understanding, she gets it. She gets what Jesus has been teaching, that the most important command is to love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all of your soul, and all of your mind. Remember, Jesus has just been talking about that. And here comes this woman who we have no indication has been with Jesus the whole time. We know the 12 have been there the whole time. It's just a woman. By the way, we're going to see this happen time and time again, that the women in the last six chapters of Mark get it when Jesus' own disciples don't. And this woman gets that. And too often we can be like the disciples in this story. We can root ourselves so strongly in logic and reason and getting things right that we forget what it is that Jesus really wants. Like they're so concerned on this wastefulness that they stop thinking about what does Jesus want. They're not even paying attention to what Jesus wants. They just want to get it right. And the right thing to do is to take care of the poor. That's what makes sense, right? And that's why he's calling us in the story to just pour ourselves out extravagantly like the woman. Don't concern yourself with that. Not everyone appreciates this freedom of expression. In fact, not everyone thinks Jesus is worthy, or anyone is worthy of that sort of devotion, like making yourself look foolish devotion. Does anybody else have a complex about that? About like the fear of appearing foolish in front of other people? That's like one of my biggest fears. It was the main reason I never wanted to be a preacher, by the way. Because I know no matter what I say up here, somebody out there is smarter than me. You know who you are. Right? And that's what the disciples are. This just doesn't make sense to them. And so one of them thinks it's worth being foolish over Jesus. And Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went to the chief priest to betray Jesus to them. They were delighted to hear this and promised to give him money. So he watched for an opportunity to hand him over. And I think it's strange that none of the gospel writers tell us Judas' motivations. Like, they don't tell us exactly why. Isn't that strange? Like, that's what I want to know. Why did Judas do this? But Mark situates this story where he does for a reason. And I think what he's trying to do is show us a contrast between Judas, one of the 12, and this unnamed woman. This woman, she served Jesus regardless of the cost. Like, she gave everything, even though it was an extravagance. Judas, on the other hand, he sealed a deal to betray Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. Oh, you know what kind of money that was? Yeah, $200. She gives $30,000 to Jesus without batting an eye. He betrays Jesus for $200. That's the difference between them. Because if you think about it, both Judas and this unnamed woman, they both did what they could. Neither will ever be forgotten, like Jesus said. The question for us this morning is how we're going to follow the right example. How are we going to hand our alabaster jar over in service? As we sing this morning, as we pray, as we dive into the Word of God, as we give, as we work, as we serve, how can we be extravagant? How can we let go? How can we free ourselves to worship and serve and live with this kind of unabashed lack of fear? And the short answer is, here's the short answer, and you're going to like this because it's so simple you can remember it. The way that we free ourselves is we can't. You can't. I can't. But praise God, He can. I can never, like, not care enough about what you think to be willing to let go of my fear of embarrassment in front of people. But that's something God specializes in. Galatians 5:13, the Apostle Paul says, "You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free. But do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love." Or in another place, 2 Corinthians 3:17, Paul says, "Now the Spirit of the Lord, where the Spirit, the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom." Now there is freedom from sin, and sometimes we really teach about that, but there is also a freedom because, you know, you've been given the Spirit, and we have the Spirit, and the Spirit is freedom. Freedom to love, freedom to give, freedom to serve, freedom from the obligation to look and act a certain way for everyone else's approval. Freedom to not fit in a certain mold so that everyone will think the exact right thing about you all the time. Freedom to just give it all to God and not worry about the consequences. Free to love God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind, with all of your strength. You are free to do that, not because you have freed yourself, but because that's what Jesus dies to do. He dies to free us from all of the obligations that we have been carrying around to the rest of the world. And He reprioritizes our lives in a dramatic way. And this morning, if you are ready to give it all to Jesus, even if you don't have it all right, just know He can do something amazing with your small jar, whatever might be in it. So if we can pray for you, love on you, lift you up, bring you into the family of Jesus Christ. And anyway, won't you come now as we stand and as we sing?
My faith looks up to Thee, Thou Lamb.